Hello and welcome to your free therapy session. My name is Holly.
My name is Violet. Sorry. And this is Therapy Hour.
Because everybody needs therapy.
But not everyone can afford it.
You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM. We're broadcasting from the traditional, ancestral, and unceded Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam speaking Musqueam peoples.
We have a very fun, super exciting, really such a just hype up episode this week for you
super
all.
Super positive, not anxiety provoking at all.
We're not going to be vulnerable at all this week.
No. We decidedly chose this topic so we didn't have to be vulnerable.
Yeah. It's super healthy. I'm just kidding. This week, we are speaking about imposter syndrome and diving into all of what that is and our experiences with it and some research behind it, as always. We gave a little shout out last week at the very end of our episode, but I just want to give another one to our friend Abril, who suggested this topic. And we got some positive feedback before this episode even began, people really excited about it. And I think that's reflective of the way that it really resonates with a lot of people.
Yeah, especially in university as well.
Totally. We actually, in discussing this topic for this week, we're talking about, ironically, we sometimes feel imposter syndrome about this podcast.
Yeah.
And doing this podcast.
Yeah. Well, also, like, to give a, like, definition, I guess, beforehand to anyone who doesn't understand what imposter syndrome is, pretty much imposter syndrome is this idea that you believe that your achievements are fraudulent and that the way that you've gotten to, like, achieve the things that you've achieved in your life are kind of out of tricking people, or it was luck. And so there's this, like, ever-present anxiety that comes with imposter syndrome, because you continuously keep achieving things, but you keep thinking that the reason why you're achieving these things is because it's like a fluke, pretty much.
Totally. Yeah, I think that word fraud is really at the crux of what imposter syndrome is. And, you know, it's not that you're not achieving things, you know, it's not the same kind of as our rejection episode,
right,
where you're having to deal with the fact that you haven't met this goal, or you haven't gotten this job, or, you know, you're facing this rejection. It's, you are succeeding, you're getting that job, you're getting that good grade in that class, you know, whatever the case may be. But internally, you're like, how am I getting away with this?
Yeah.
I'm not worthy of this success that I'm finding in my life.
Yeah. And we were talking about how with this podcast, we weren't expecting, at least I wasn't expecting the reach that it got. Like, for me, I thought, you know, maybe some of my friends will listen to it, but they'll probably listen on and off. It was really just like a passion project, if anything. And then the more and more people would listen to it and would give us feedback, and a lot of really positive feedback as well. And I was saying to Violet, like, you know, there have been times where people have responded to us or sent us DMs or something like that and given us this really long spiel of, like, how amazing the podcast is, or, like, the specific episode. And there will be a part of my brain that's like, oh, they're just saying this because they want to be nice. Even though half the people that are doing that have no business needing to do that.
No, they have no reason, no motivating alternative, like, reason to do that. And, like, but I feel the same way sometimes. Like, I want to be really proud of us and proud of this podcast, and I am. But sometimes I do think, who am I to be doing this podcast?
I know.
Why are my opinions or thoughts or words any more special than anyone else's? How is my perspective even unique on these topics? And it's hard not to do that, especially kind of as a beginner radio host. You know, like, this is my first radio show that I've done. It's yours as well. And, like, I can look at your work and be like, oh, Holly contributes a lot to this podcast, you know, like, does really great research, brings in a lot of interesting ideas. But sometimes it's hard to do that same, like, validation for myself.
Yeah, I feel the same way. I'm always like, oh, like, Violet brought up a really good point in the last one, or, like, she really carried this episode and really, like, brought up a lot of, like, interesting things. And then I'll be like, and I just wasn't doing anything. Right. And it's so funny. Like, it's so stupid in a way. And I think that so many people that I've talked to about imposter syndrome almost have this consciousness when they talk about it, when they think, no, I'm doing a lot of work, I'm studying a lot, or I worked really hard, and I'm, but the, it's kind of like the achievement aspect. You're like, I don't know. I don't think that was completely me there. Like, I think this was just a stroke of luck, which I feel like that's always my ideas. I always am like, it's a stroke of luck that, I guess in the concept of the podcast, it's like, oh, it's a stroke of luck that people, like, started listening to it and, like, maybe like it. Or it's like, oh, it's like a bit of a fluke. And then I'll just go through all the excuses in my head as to why other people have been tricked into thinking that this is a good podcast.
Yeah. Or, like, I have a unique opportunity as an exec at CITR to hear other people's ideas and pitches for new radio shows.
Right.
And it's very hard not to kind of compare and be like, oh, like, that's really thoughtful and unique. Is my podcast thoughtful and unique? Like, I don't know how my own work compares to theirs. And that can be, like, kind of intimidating then. Or even, you know, people ask, oh, what do you do at CITR? And I find myself getting a little bashful of, like, oh, I'm a programmer. I have my own radio show. Like, it's so embarrassing. It's really not that good. You shouldn't listen to it. But also at the same time, like, there's a reason why we make this, and there's a reason why we put it out, and there's a reason why we chose this topic, because it makes sense for us and because we do have certain aspects about ourselves or qualifications that, you know, in theory should make us really qualified to do this. And we have all this positive feedback from people, which should be validating those reasons why we started this podcast and those positive feelings, and kind of uplifting it and making me feel better about, yes, like, I am a radio show host. I am a programmer. But sometimes it just does the opposite effect for some reason.
Well, even when we were, Violet and I were just up at the Gal, and we were talking with somebody, and when I first brought up the podcast, he was like, oh, what is it about? And I was like, oh, like, we kind of just talk about some issues that young people go into. I don't know. And then I started, like, second guessing myself and being like, oh, that's such a stupid topic. Like, why do we do? And it's fascinating. Like you were saying, like, getting that validation should uplift us. And I do think at a certain point it does, because we constantly talk about how people will reach out to us anytime we go to a party. People are bringing up the podcast to us. And I think in the moment it feels really good. But in that moment of, like, self-reflection, or like the more insecure times that I have, when I then will start to think about the podcast, that is when these, like, imposter feelings will start at being like, I'm a fraud. I've tricked everyone into thinking I'm smarter than I am, or that I'm more coherent than I actually am. Like, everyone is just being completely tricked by me.
And I think also, I don't know. I think that it's a really frustrating feeling. And it is kind of frustrating that it's linked to achievement, too. That's kind of an interesting aspect of it. Like, as you were kind of saying a few minutes ago about that connection to achievement. Like, why do our brains do this? And also, when I was kind of doing a little bit of research and looking into it, it's not like you get to a certain level of achievement and then you're like, oh, yes, I am good and talented and, you know, worthy of success and appraisal. You know, from what I found, you can kind of, like, be the best at something in the world and still be like, I'm a fraud.
Yeah. And we'll get into that in the research portion, because it actually is more aggravated the higher your achievements are. And I think that's really interesting. I was going to ask you, do you remember the first time you heard about the term imposter syndrome?
That's a good question. I don't know. know. I don't think that there's a specific time in mind when I heard about it, but I feel like the moment I heard the term, I understood what it meant.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Yeah. How about you? Do you have a specific time?
Yeah, because I can remember it was a very good friend of mine that started talking about it with herself, and she kept bringing it up in conversations, and I kept nodding my head, but I had no idea what it was. Uh-huh. And I think it took me a few weeks to actually look into it, but it was kind of that moment where I looked up what this meant and I was like, oh, there's a word for this. That's cool. That's great to know.
Right. So you were already having that sensation, but you had never really like heard anyone talk about it before.
No. And I can remember like for a very long time, even in my smaller achievements, just, you know, in high school or something like that, I remember getting the role of like some person in a play that I was in and thinking that I'd completely tricked everyone into thinking I was good at acting. It's just a very, like we've been saying, it's just really heavily set into a lot of people's minds. And like as we go through the research portion, we're going to start talking about groups of people that feel it more than others, and also how negatively it can really impact us and our work, because some people are able to take imposter syndrome and roll with it, while others might feel like a bit debilitated by it.
Yeah, I'm really interested to hear a little bit more about the research that you've done and the variables that make you maybe more or less susceptible to imposter syndrome, or whether that's even a thing, and also the different groups that are more affected by it than others. Before that, we're going to go to our little song segment for this week. We're going to be listening to an appropriately titled song by Sydney Gish. It's called Imposter Syndrome. Mm-hmm. And when we come back, we'll be diving into some of the research that Holly has done on imposter syndrome. And we'll also have some ads for you. So we'll be right back.
What's a human being gotta be like? What's a way to just be competent? These sweet instincts ruin my life. Every other day I'm wondering, was it a mistake to try and define what I'm certain's mad incompetence? These sweet instincts ruin my life.
our destination. We hope you enjoyed the flight.
You're listening to CITR 101.9, broadcasting from UBC's Point Grey campus, located on the traditional, unceded, Coast Salish territory of the Hunkaminam-speaking Musqueam people.
Nisiam Nisiaya, Thinkum Queen Ansep, Hydra CM, Nisiam Nisiaya, Anthasiakuya, Talitin, Homasqueam, Mustayo.
Claim what's yours. Join the more than 130,000 others who attended a federal Indian day school and have applied for compensation. July 13, 2022 is your last day to submit a claim. It's free and it's confidential. For information and legal support, visit IndianDayschools.com or call 1-844-539-3815.
And we're back.
Nice. That was a fun one.
You're listening to Therapy Hour on CITR 101.9 FM, and we're talking about imposter syndrome. So I wanted to talk a little bit about the research that I did. I was really lucky that I was listening into an episode of Hidden Brain, and they brought on a researcher that specifically researches imposter syndrome.
Wow.
His name is Dr. Kevin Coakley. He is a professor, I think, at the University of Austin.
Okay.
He doesn't use the term imposter syndrome. It's much more of a colloquial term.
Interesting.
I think mostly because syndrome in psychology means something very different.
Yeah, I was thinking about that. I think also for how common imposter syndrome is,
yes,
to use the word syndrome makes it seem like, ooh, you have this syndrome where you feel like a fraud.
I know, and then I feel like that's so much more isolating. You're like, oh, I must be one of not many that have this. So he calls the term imposterism, but he's done a lot of really, really cool work. So like I was saying before, the definition of imposter syndrome is kind of this idea. It's very common among high achievers, and their reaction to their achievements is that they are a phony and their accomplishments were a stroke of luck or even possibly a mistake.
Wow.
And they're like holding that mistake at, like, in. They are keeping the lie up. And he's done a lot of work specifically with imposterism in university students, because it's incredibly common in these types of institutions. Like, they brought up some statistics about how 20% of first year university students end up dropping out. And so the more and more you keep going into university, the more accomplishments you achieve, the more you may be thinking like, oh, like, why am I here? What was the difference between me and this other person?
Yeah, and you're also in this classroom setting where you're surrounded by people, you know, who you're looking around and being like, oh, like, they're working so hard, or even this is so easy for them and it's so hard for me. So why do I even deserve to be in this class? How can I even deserve to, like, get a good grade on this final because I'm not smart enough for that?
Yeah, and I definitely feel that a lot, especially when I do well in courses. I always tend to just look back and be like, oh, well, that was just so easy. And, like, of course I should have done this. Like, everyone probably did this well, or everyone did better than I did.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think that university is a huge breeding ground for that. There is so much competition in universities, no matter what, like, your program is, no matter what your rank is. University is the way that we are tested and the way that we are, like, conceived of as students. It is highly competitive with, like, all these achievements that come along with it. And no wonder so many people come back and think, oh, well, there was, you know, 50 other people in this class. Like, why didn't they do the thing that why didn't they get the thing that I did?
Well, I even think back to when I was in a time in my life where I was receiving my university acceptance letters or rejection letters, and sometimes I would play this like weird trick in my mind of like, oh, if this school wants me, then like how good could it be?
Oh my God, me too. I thought about that when I got into UBC because yeah. it was this first school that I ever got into.
Yeah.
And I literally thought the same thing. I was like, well, how good could this school be if I got accepted?
Yeah, exactly. Like, oh, they must just let anyone in. It's like, no, like, you know, UBC has got a great reputation. It's a great school.
I know.
Yeah.
Yeah, so he talks a lot about that and specifically in university, and he kind of theorizes this idea that people with high achievements experience this because it's difficult to accept those achievements and because with achievements comes the fact that not everyone gets them.
So do you think Harry Styles before going out and performing a show is like, I'm a fraud?
Such an interesting person to bring up.
Well, is it not a good example?
I guess think it is. A good one. I don't know. I'm not sure about Harry Styles. I do know that he references Michelle Obama and Maya Angelou as two people that have talked a lot about imposter syndrome.
Yeah, I did read about Maya Angelou speaking a lot about that.
And then you think about Maya Angelou, probably greatest poet of all time, had all these achievements, all these words, so many people that have expressed so much like love and gratitude and achievementship to her.
And it's not just like her friends trying to make her feel
better. It is the entire world. It is multiple like associations that give out awards that have been like, this person did really well, and I
couldn't be me.
And you know, the commonalities between the reason he brought up Michelle Obama and Maya Angelou is that they're both Black women. And so I wanted to get into a little bit of a study he did, which I thought was really interesting, which was specifically a study at a university looking at Asian American students, Black students, and Latina students and rating their like school related stress or academic related stress and their imposter syndrome.
Interesting.
And they found that Black and Latina students had higher stress associated with school. However, Asian American students had higher rates of imposter syndrome.
Whoa.
And then they found that imposter syndrome was a stronger indicator for poor mental health than stress was.
Interesting.
Yeah, and sorry, I misspoke earlier. It wasn't academic stress. It was minority status stress, which is pretty much kind of like anxiety knowing that you are a minority, usually a racial minority, coming into like a predominantly white institution and fearing that that might impact your academic success.
So just to clarify, the Black and Latina students had higher levels of stress.
Yes.
But in regards to the minority...
like minority status.
Okay. But then the Asian American students were experiencing more imposter syndrome.
Yes. And imposter syndrome was correlated more with mental health problems and like lack of... what's it called? Like... I can't think of the word on the top of my head. I didn't write it down. But just in general, like, we're experiencing poor mental health. And this was interesting for the findings because that's not what they predicted.
Right.
But what they found in, like, later interviews with those students and just doing other tests found that the pressures of school are put on to Asian Americans in, like, cultural households, also, like, fitting into, like, Asian stereotypes. So the pressure of doing well is, like, very high for them. Not to say that it's also not high for Black and Latina students. It's just that it was a higher rate for Asian Americans. And because of all that stress, when they achieve those high achievements, because they are working so hard to get those achievements, they had a higher likelihood of saying that, like, this was all a fraud. Which was so fascinating to me that, you know, we talked a lot about how being, it's almost like the better you are, the more you think you don't deserve it, which is fascinating.
Yeah, and... as you're saying this, I'm thinking about this excerpt from a Roxane Gay book that I read where she was the only black professor, and she walked past this room where her colleagues were talking about how she was a diversity hire, all of her white colleagues. And I'm just thinking about, like, the struggle of already having imposter syndrome on your own, and then having these other people externally almost validate that for you, and like how damaging that must be to then go back and be like, am I the diversity hire? Even though, again, like, Roxane Gay is another great example of a very prolific writer and great thinker.
Well, and that's, you know, this gets into such a bigger conversation when we talk about, you know, racial quotas at universities and the racial stereotypes we have with who is an academic achiever and who isn't. Mm-hmm. And also talking about diversity hires, whether it comes to race or gender.
Yeah.
And I, you know, I didn't read anything about this, but I'm sure there are plenty of theories. And what my own theory would be is that partially because of those stereotypes, there is a lot more imposter syndrome in people of color or people in minority groups than there are in people that aren't. Because we've pretty much been given this narrative that the reason you got where you were was because they needed to hire someone that looked like you.
Right.
When in reality, the reason why, you know, I'm not going to say that the quota system of universities is perfect whatsoever, but the reason there are quota systems is because we have implicit biases.
Yes.
We already, most likely, no matter who you are, because you have been fed racial narratives, gender narratives your entire life, even if you're actively working against those, you will still have implicit biases. Mm-hmm. They've done a million tests on people, like giving to like rep, what is it, like the same resume, but then one person has a stereotypical female name and the other one has a stereotypical male name. Mm. The male one will always get picked more. Same thing with stereotypical black names versus stereotypical white names. Mm. The white names will get picked more.
Yeah.
And the reason why we have these quotas is so that we can, you know, surpass the implicit biases. But unfortunately, that has turned into this narrative of like, you only got here because of the way that you look or your background. And then that then negatively impacts the minority individual for multiple reasons.
Yeah.
And like, not only imposter syndrome, but that must be contributing to it.
Yeah, I had a class where we discussed the kind of bittersweet nature of affirmative action, where it's like, yes, we need to have this because of these implicit biases that you were speaking about, and also explicit biases, and also the fact that because of systematic oppression, a lot of these groups haven't been able to access the same funding, the same education, that puts them at the same kind of playing field as some of these other students who come from more privilege. But then also on the flip side of that, then because people are aware about things such as affirmative action, they people will look at these students and think, oh, you're the affirmative action kid.
Yeah.
Like, you are just here to make the school look better and to fill a quota.
Yeah.
And that becomes almost more damaging.
Yeah.
Because
absolutely.
You're bringing these people into these spaces, but you're not actually doing anything to create a safer space for them once they've entered.
Yeah, no, I mean, that's the whole issue with like structures. And, you know, I've had lots of conversations about like the issues surrounding like it's like equity something.
There's inclusion.
Like equity, inclusion, and something else.
Diversity.
Yeah. I think they're called DEI. So it's like diversity, equity, and inclusion. And like those programs are really great.
Yeah.
But they also just work within systems. And like this is a lot like of what Dr. Coakley talks about, is like the systems themselves are flawed.
Mm-hmm.
And so when we just bring in other people that look different, it's not really going to do much.
Right.
And like,
other than be kind of traumatizing.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. And the other thing that he talks a lot about, I actually read two articles about this, and I don't have the author of the other one on here, but the other thing that people talk a lot about with imposter syndrome is related to when there is not representation in a certain field with people that look like you.
Yeah.
And that can, again, aggravate imposter syndrome, because you're sitting there looking at, you know, let's say in a class of like mostly men, and then like a girl sits down and then she's like, oh, I'm one of the like three women here. What in the world do I have to offer? And that just, and then also like not seeing people in higher positions than you that look like you.
I'm feeling like you need to prove yourself that much more because you're kind of the sore thumb there. So it's like, you know, when you're part of the majority group, whether that's your race, your religion, your gender identity, whatever, it's quite easy to, you know, not that you won't have struggles, but it's easier to say, I belong here, because I'm looking around and a lot of people who look like me are also here. But when you are not part of that majority group, it's so much easier to turn around and like look in the mirror and say, I don't know if I really should be here. Like, what have I done to really earn that?
And so, like, we bring all this together to think about how in specifically these academic spaces, imposter syndrome is already so prevalent amongst, you know, a broad group of people. But then specifically looking at groups of people who have very little representation of their either, like, racial group, gender group, or anything else. It becomes even worse. And then Dr. Coakley goes on to start talking a lot about how because of imposter syndrome, you have kind of these two avenues. In a lot of times, specifically with my racial minority groups, it is much more likely that those groups will just work 10 times harder. And he kind of looks at it as like a bit of a benefit and a bit of a downside.
Yeah, I could
because,
see that.
Because you have like, you know, this drive to achieve these like great things. And a lot of the time, like those things do happen. And there's been correlational studies between, you know, having imposter syndrome and also like achieving high things. On the other side, one, there was another study that showed that having high rates of imposter syndrome can often be associated with burnout. So just like stress, anxiety, depression induced, like working yourself to the bone because you're not like, it's almost as if you're running a race with no finish line because you just keep going because you're like, I need to reach this like end. And I feel like I've gotten there so many times where like, I keep saying like, I need to do this, this, and this, and then I'll feel confident in myself. And then I get it. And then I still don't feel confident in myself. And then also a lot of the times with imposter syndrome, and this kind of goes back down to like representation issues and issues surrounding minority groups, is that it does sometimes push people to not even try for certain things.
I think that that's one of the biggest issues with me, my relationship with imposter syndrome is I'll get so in my head about something that, and so fearful, so driven by fear, that I won't even say my idea that I had to, you know, in my group project, or I won't apply to something, or I won't, you know, stick my neck out there and be vulnerable in whatever way, because I'm already, you know, I've already proved to myself that I'm not going going to achieve whatever that thing is. And that's really sad. And I think if I externally like had a friend come to me and say, oh, I don't think I'm going to get this job, so I'm just not going to apply to it, for example, I'd be like, well, what's the harm in applying?
I know.
But it's harder when it's in your head, you know?
And I think that because I also think about the time where I was applying to universities and I'd gotten into my Canadian schools. But I had a dream school, which was University of Chicago. And I said that I didn't want to apply because I thought that if I got in, I wouldn't be able to say no to the Canadian schools. And it just made more sense for me to come to Canada. But I'd be lying to myself if it wasn't also like, I don't want to get rejected. Like, I didn't, I don't think I got I got rejected from like a few schools, but I also knew that I wasn't going to get into those schools. But I had a pretty good rate of like I was getting into schools, and I was like, cool, this is great. And I don't want to be disappointed, and I don't think I'm good enough, and I would rather just not know.
Yeah,
I feel like that's always my response, and we can get into that like in the latter thing. I want to finish up like this thing, but I wanted to add that in. The last thing that I wanted to get through, which was Dr. Coakley's suggestions for imposter syndrome, because I think, you know, when you read them out loud, they're quite simple, but I think it's important to talk about them.
Yeah.
And one thing he suggests is having people that are higher up in positions of like workplace or school, like admit to people about their feelings of imposter syndrome, because normalizing it on all levels makes people feel better, because it shows kind of this, you know, intimate aspect of like, you are not the only person who thinks that they're not good enough.
Yeah, even thinking about to the story that you shared about hearing the term imposter syndrome for the first time, because someone in your life was vocalizing their own experience with it.
Yeah.
And then you were able to look into it and say, oh, I feel that. And through that pathway of finding through someone else sharing their experience, I'm sure to some extent it made it feel a little bit more normalized of,
absolutely.
Oh, at least one other person feels this way. And it must be more because there's a term.
There's a term. A bunch of researchers got together, and there is research on this. Mm-hmm. There are like op-eds about this.
Yeah.
When I looked up imposter syndrome, the list went on and on.
Totally.
So I feel like normalizing it and talking about it, and I'm hoping that this podcast can reach some, or this episode specifically can reach some people in knowing that it is a very normal thing. I actually think that there are, I would be surprised if someone didn't have imposter syndrome at this level, at least of where I am. The other thing he talks about is like reframing your ideas into positive ones, which I know is difficult, and sounds very like therapy 101, but I am going to share one of them just so people can have an idea. He said something like, instead of thinking everyone is better than you, and you're like going to fail because everybody is smarter than you, you can think about how much you can learn about the people around you, which I really liked.
That's nice.
And I've been trying to think about that even in these past like couple of weeks when I've been very stressed with school and thinking that I'm stupid. Is like, okay, there are lots of very, very smart people around me, and that might feel very intimidating, but I can learn a lot from these people. And then lastly, he just talks about like having representation within both like positions of power, but also in the university context, as more goes for professors, is using material and articles from diverse groups of people. He's much more on the diversity and equity side, which I have like my own like things about. But if we are thinking about a starting point and we're thinking about working within the system that we have, it's a great start to have it.
Yeah, well, just to circle back super quickly to this idea of, you know, learning from those around you who, and like taking them as people who inspire you rather than, you know, putting yourself down in comparison. I'm just thinking about what I had shared earlier about hearing other people's radio pitches. And, you know, wanting to reframe that a little bit for myself of what can I learn? Like, I'm so lucky that these people were able to share their ideas with me, and what can I do and take into my own creative work, and also what can I share with other people?
I love that. I love that for you.
Thank you.
I love it for us. We're gonna take a quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking about some more times that where we've experienced imposter syndrome and how it's affected us.
The AMS Sexual Assault Support Centre, the SASC, is a free and confidential service which provides support to those who experience sexual assault, intimate partner violence, and harassment. We provide services to folks of all genders, including students, staff, faculty, and those who have a connection to the UBC Vancouver campus. We provide crisis and short-term emotional support, legal, medical, and campus-related advocacy, and outreach and educational programs. We are located in the Student Nest, room 3130. For more information on our hours of operation and other resources and services, please go to our website, amssasc.ca, or visit our Facebook page, AMS Sexual Assault Support Centre.
Dead, coming to the Imperial May 6th to support their newest single, Bad Love, out now from their recently announced brand new album, Blue Skies. Available wherever you listen to music, May 27th.
And we're back. You're listening to Therapy Hour on CITR 101.9 FM.
Wow.
Just trying to switch it up. Yeah.
I thought it was AM this entire time.
Oh, you guys. I hope that people are tuning in through iHeartRadio right now.
Because we heart you.
Oh, wow.
Should have put that on the Instagram. That would have been good.
Missed opportunity. But yeah, CITR's website is down right now, so we appreciate anyone who's tuning in through alternative modes.
Yeah.
When you last heard us, we were talking about some of the research behind imposter syndrome. We talked about how we sometimes get imposter syndrome with Therapy Hour, with this podcast. But there are also other times when we have both experienced imposter syndrome. Yeah. I know I have. Can you think of a time when, you know, imposter syndrome's been a really big issue for you?
Yeah, I was thinking a lot about this in the past few weeks, and I thought about a lot of different times. And it happens a lot with school, and I was kind of diving deeper into that and thinking a little bit about, like, my family and where I come from and different, like, aspects of my life, because, you know, we talked a lot about racial minorities, but I also think that there is an aspect of, like, first gen imposter syndrome, because personally I feel like so often, and this isn't for every first gen, I think it's, like, a lot of my experience is that, you know, both my parents came from Iran with very little. They, like, really did the whole American dream thing. They were both extremely smart and like achieved so much, and like my entire family has these like very high standards. It's a very classic like Middle Eastern thing of like, you have to do really well in school, you have to do this, this, and that. And I already decided not to be an engineer or a doctor, so I was already on thin ice. But a lot of my self-worth has always come a lot from my grades. I think growing up it was a big deal to like always have good grades, but also like not be like congratulated by it. I always remember I would be yelled at if I didn't get a good grade, but also if I got a really good one, they were like, okay,
not praise.
No,
yeah,
not really.
Yeah.
And like maybe I'm sure there were definitely some times, but I have a lot of memories of like coming home like super excited to show like my 95. I remember so specifically one time showing my 95 to my dad.
Yeah.
And he was like, cool, why didn't you get 100? And I was like, bestie, I tried. So a lot of my self-worth has been set onto my grades, and like I get very anxious about them.
Yeah.
And I constantly have this like back and forth with imposter syndrome of thinking like, I don't deserve to be here. I'm not going to do well on this assignment. Like even if I put so much of my time and energy into something, I will still feel very, again, like just like a fraud. And so this happened last semester.
Okay.
I had this paper that was worth 50% of my grade. I was super anxious about it. But I was like, okay, I'm going to start it early. I'm going to go through it. Like, I'm going to do everything for it. So I worked on it. I worked really hard. I read it over. I was like, this is great. I love this. Submitted it. And then in the following weeks, I just like slowly started to convince myself that it really wasn't as good as it could be. Like, I was like, I didn't use enough sources. I just bullshitted, bull bleeped it. like, I didn't do what I was supposed to. I didn't follow the syllabus. Like, really like honing in on this idea that like, this was just a fraud. Like, I don't know what this was. I got back my grade. I got a 94.
Wow.
Genuinely thinking that I was going to fail. And then I got a 94. And then I was super stoked.
That's amazing.
And then,
uh-huh,
after another week or so, bless you, I was like, the TA probably just was lazy.
Are you serious?
That's what I thought. Aww. I was like, the TA probably just was lazy and wanted to grade it. Like, you know, she was like trying to get into winter break. It's fine, whatever. Like, I got a 94, but it's really not that big of a deal.
Wow.
So dumb.
Wow. That's so sad.
I know.
Did you, like, did you get to hear about anyone else's grades in that class or, like, see the class average? And did that help a little bit?
I was above the class average in my final
I'm
grade.
I'm sure, after getting a 94 on a 50%.
Yeah, but then I just, it's the same thing over and over again. Like, it can be an achievement.
Yeah.
And, yeah, and the reason why I brought up in the beginning about, like, where my family's from, I think that so often I hear a lot of first-gen kids talk about imposter syndrome, and it, like, really drives them. I know that it drives me to do a lot.
Yeah, and I think, you know, having immigrant parents whose experiences were very different from your own, especially in how they had to, like, necessarily achieve the accomplishments that they did.
Right.
You're kind of, you might be comparing yourself to that in and of itself too.
Absolutely.
Of like, yeah, you know, I work hard, I struggle, I do well in school, but, you know, my family escaped a war, or my family, you know, didn't have any family when they came here.
Exactly.
And I do have family, and, you know, yada, yada, yada.
Yeah, just keep comparing yourself over and over again.
Totally.
What about you, bestie?
No, I've never had any other.
It's just been this podcast, and I think it's just because it doesn't, it's not a very good podcast.
It's just because it's true. No, yeah, I have been feeling quite a bit of imposter syndrome lately, I would say, in addition to therapy hour and my, like, self-doubts and struggles with that, but also I'm graduating this semester from UBC, which is very fun and exciting, but it's also a very scary and monumental time in my life, and it means basically either going to grad school or entering the workforce and trying to be a working individual, basically.
Which is the scariest thing of all.
And I was like, no, I'm not qualified for jobs. I will not be applying. Like, I'm not interested. Not that I wasn't interested. Like, I actually think I would love and thrive in a work environment right now. And that actually really excites me.
Yeah.
But I'm afraid to apply for jobs I would actually really want because I'm afraid I'm not qualified enough.
Right.
And that does make me kind of want to point myself more towards grad school, even though, and the grad schools that I applied to, please don't listen to this, even though I don't know if that would be the most fulfilling thing for me, but I am really trying to push myself to not let fear be the driving factor in not going for the thing that I actually want, even if it takes a little bit longer to get it.
Yeah,
but it's really hard because the reality of putting yourself out there and applying for jobs is I very well may not get some of them. And I think it's really difficult to already feel that imposter syndrome, push yourself past that point and be like, I'm going to be brave.
Yeah.
And then get rejected.
I know.
And,
well, it's even like going back to our rejection episode, you know, we know that rejection is so difficult to deal with. And, like, you know, I guess the lines between fear of rejection and imposter syndrome can somewhat get blurred because you can be a highly accomplished person. And this is something, because I feel the same way about jobs. Like, I constantly in my past and now regrettably, so I haven't applied to certain things because I didn't think I deserved them. I didn't think I had the, like, right requirements to give. And so I didn't get them, obviously, because I didn't apply.
Yeah.
And then this past year when I was just like, okay, I'm just going to apply for this thing. And if I don't get it, I don't get it. Because it's the same outcome, right?
Yeah.
And then I got those jobs, which is great. But I think that, like, there is this, like, really big fear of rejection. But I think that that fear is also just aggravated by the idea that you're not qualified. Even if you can go through this, like, this job application's requirements mm-hmm. and be like, I check off most of these boxes.
Yeah.
Also, I'm like good at these things. Yeah. I can talk about these things.
Yeah.
You can sit there and do everything, but still just be kind of like stunted with this idea of like, they're going to see through me.
Mm-hmm.
That's what I always get
and
scared of.
Like a big fear for me is being like, okay, like I apply to my dream jobs. I apply to the jobs that really pique my interest and they're really what I want to do. I go for the interview, it goes well, and they hire me.
Right.
But what's going to happen? I'm going to show up to work and they're all going to realize that I'm not good at what I do and I really don't know anything. And like, you know, not that I'm like lying. Like they would be hiring me based off of my resume, my performance in the interview, and because they want to hire me, right?
Right.
Like on a logical level, yeah. I can see that.
Yes.
But like showing up and like recognizing, sure, maybe they'll train me. But in the back of my head, I'm going to be like, oh, like someone else wouldn't even have to be trained on things like this. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like it's
no,
just
I get
not.
It.
Well, it's so frustrating.
For one of the jobs I worked this year, we had to do these workshops. And I remember like going into my first workshop being mm-hmm. so nervous mm-hmm. and being like, oh, my God, this is going to be so bad. I haven't prepped enough. I haven't done
yeah.
any of these things. And then I did it and I got positive feedback from it.
Mm-hmm.
Yet still,
yeah.
here we are where I'm just sitting there being like, they're just saying this because they're nice. They're
yeah.
going to catch me at some. That's what I always feel in some of my jobs. I'm always mm-hmm. like, they're going to figure it out. They're going to figure mm-hmm. it out that I'm not as good as they think I am.
Yeah.
Which is just so unfortunate.
Yeah. And I think too, this like weird imbalance of being an undergraduate student and being put in these positions of power, whether that's being a team lead or running a workshop.
Right.
And I think, too, in my experience, kind of stepping into that leadership role,
mm-hmm.
I think I've done well with it in the past, and I'm glad I've been given the opportunity,
mm-hmm.
but I am, like, riddled in imposter syndrome while it's happening.
Well, do you find that there's a time in... Can you, like, think about a time where you had imposter syndrome about something, but it, like, did make you achieve something greater?
Mm.
Not to say that imposter syndrome is good, but, like, I just want to know if that's also an experience you've had before.
That it pushed me to
yeah.
kind of work harder?
Yeah.
That's a good question. I mean, I feel like a lot of the work I've done at CITR kind of falls into that
mm-hmm.
category where it was very intimidating and I felt a lot of imposter syndrome, but then I just threw myself into it and I realized I was getting a lot out of it
yeah.
by investing so much hard work. How
yeah.
about you? Have you had that experience?
Yeah, I can think about a few times, but specifically like this year I took this like research seminar course. And I thought I was highly underqualified.
Mm.
I did not think I was meant to be there. I thought they're going to figure it out. I'm going to have the worst presentation and the worst research paper.
Mm.
And ultimately, it just made me put in so many more hours, which like is unfortunate. but I, you know, submitted something that I was proud of and that I knew I'd worked hard on. And yes, there's still these like little elements, because I remember like doing my presentation for the first time and I hadn't presented in such a long time, and like in it I was like, oh, I don't know if I'm doing this right, blah blah blah, and then I got positive feedback and then reverted back and was like, oh, now I feel like I didn't actually do as well as I thought
mm-hmm.
I did, blah blah blah. And then I at some point when I was working on my final like research report, I was like, okay, if I don't think I've done a good enough job thus far, then I have to do a really good job this time.
Mm.
And I did it, and it's like, it kind of feels good.
Mm-hmm.
But I also think that I accomplished a lot because of the imposter syndrome. And I don't think that imposterism is bad. I think it does
mm-hmm.
drive a lot of people. I think that if someone thought that all the accomplishments they got, they wholeheartedly deserved, I think that there are people who do that. And I think they're like cis white men.
Yeah.
Yeah,
that makes sense.
And they're not the greatest types of people. I'm definitely
right.
not the people that deserve a lot of the things they
mm.
get. So I think it's good to have a little ounce of like I feel like that drives you a little
yeah.
bit to keep up with your work.
Yeah.
But I think if it's to the point where it's debilitating
yeah.
and you're not applying for jobs or you're not going out for awards. Like, I feel like people even forget that you can just like apply for certain things, like awards or like presentation thingies. Like, I don't know. But I think that people will stop themselves from doing that just because they're like, oh, this will never happen for me. So why even try?
I think you can recognize the positive aspects of imposter syndrome, but also with that, recognize the fact that at the end of the day, we are with ourselves and in our own mind every single day, like day in and day out.
There is no escaping.
Believe me. Like, we've seen all of our failures. We've seen us on our worst days. We've been there on our lowest lows. And you don't see that on the outside for other people. And, you know, it can be really hard to have that perspective, I think, sometimes, where you know and can see all of these lows in your own life, but our perception of others is only limited to what we observe and what they share with us, which is ultimately going to be an edited version of their own life. And yes, they can share their failures or their feelings of imposter syndrome, but only if they kind of let us into the world in that way. And I think that's a really crucial part of this feeling of imposter syndrome that can really creep up for us.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
I think that, you know, what we were saying earlier, I really encourage people to be open about their, not only their like imposterism, but honestly also being open about your failures. I've recently been seeing this trend on TikTok where people will like talk about, you know, I saw this one girl that was like, I have like this really great job and really great friends and I go out a lot and I get all this accomplished, but I haven't done my laundry in 3 weeks and I haven't texted my family and I haven't done these things. Like, I think that kind of transparency is really important, and like the transparency on what your losses are and also what your insecurities are, because I've found the more and more I talk to people about imposter syndrome and not feeling like you deserve the things you've gotten, the more I've noticed that people are actually, you know, they also feel this way. And that makes me feel better.
Yeah.
I'm like, okay, at least I'm not the only one who thinks this way.
100%. Do you think that's linked to our homework?
That is linked to our homework. As I was talking, I realized it was kind of our homework. But your homework for this week is, if you find yourself in a position of power or even talking with your friends or, you know, your coworkers or your friends in classes, we would encourage you to be open and vulnerable about your imposter syndrome and your insecurities, because I genuinely think it will benefit others and be there to uplift the people around you when they're experiencing imposter syndrome, because then everybody knows that everybody else feels scared, so we can all at least be scared together.
Yes. And a little message from Therapy Hour. We want you to know that you are talented, you're capable, and you belong.
Aww.
This has been your free therapy session for this week. We're your hosts. I'm Violet.
And I'm Halle. This is Therapy Hour, because everyone needs therapy.
But not everyone can afford it. Be sure to tune in again in 2 weeks when we'll be talking about friendship breakups.
Yes, this is a very interesting topic and we want you all to be a part of it. So if you have a story you want to share with us about your own experience with friendship breakups, be sure to follow us on Instagram at TherapyHourPod for an opportunity to do so. We'll see you in 2 weeks.
Thanks for tuning in. Bye-bye.
Love ya.